Another thing that I thought was quite bizarre to see is that we had video cameras before our house and behind our house that were videotaping everyone who was coming in and who was going out, and in a very detailed way. At 3 o'clock, Andre Holm with two children goes out, and 3:10, he and two children come back, and long, long, long lists of descriptions of stuff like that. They had put up the video cameras apparently sometime in the winter and hadn't realized that during spring, trees tend to grow leaves. And realized, and this is also in the files, that the video camera behind the house couldn't really document anymore what was happening behind the house and who was leaving and entering, and so they took that back. And as a result, in the files you see it mentioned that since the video camera behind the house couldn't operate anymore properly and had to be taken down during this or the other attack, they couldn't completely exclude the possibility that Andre left the house and therefore may have participated in these attacks. Which made me think that maybe we should ask for more video cameras rather than less. I couldn't get myself to actually demanding that, but I was wondering. Some of the technical little things that were happening were, for example, and this happened many, many times, that when I called from my mobile, Andre's mobile, then surprisingly I didn't reach him, but instead my own mailbox. This happened to other people too. It happened lots and lots and lots of times that I had people calling me who said, oh, but actually I dialed Andre's number. And also it happened that the phones who seemed to be working okay and looked okay and didn't have a dark monitor or anything actually didn't work when people called them and instead had crashed but didn't show. We had emails disappear, and that's something that I really found quite unbelievable. I didn't think this was technically possible. We had several instances where I actually checked this. For example, I administrate several mailing lists, and Andre tried to subscribe to one of these mailing lists, and his email trying to subscribe to the mailing list never appeared. And then I tried as a list administrator to subscribe him, and this also didn't work. The emails going back and forth around this issue never got to where they were sent to, and we took quite some time to trace these things, and still today it's unclear to me how that actually works, but it was amazing to watch when you like look at your mailbox and you see something that's sent and you look at where it should be arriving and it just doesn't, and you do it a second time and then it arrives, but the first one just isn't there. We had a funny behavior of our TV. This has happened already way before. I think you probably all know this incident, like you sit on your computer and you have boxes connected to the computer and your phone is being called, and all of a sudden the boxes of your computer do something like did-did-did-did-did-did. And our TV was doing the same thing and had started also months before we knew about the investigation, and we had understood as much that we needed to put our mobile phones in some other room or turn them off if we wanted to be able to watch TV. And after the arrest, of course, I understood why this was happening all of the time. And but also I had been told by the lawyer that now, because everything that could be considered conspirative behavior should be avoided at the moment, I try to not ever turn my phone off. I try to not ever forget my phone anywhere. Even though I was not, or am not, as far as I know, a terrorism suspect, I still didn't want to give any more hint that something may be wrong. I really had enough of all of this, so I didn't want to turn my phone off. And but I also wanted to watch this show that I wanted to watch, and what I did was then, and that is a pretty good indication of what surveillance does to you. I called my mother, whom I knew was watching the same show and really didn't want to be disturbed by watching that. And I called her and said, listen, I'm not actually calling you. I don't want to disturb you very much. I'm calling you because I want to tell the cops that I'm going to turn my mobile off so that I can watch TV. I felt a bit funny doing that. The really funny thing, though, is it worked. I didn't need to turn the mobile off. The did-it-did-it just stopped. Other bizarre things. Oh, actually, I forgot something that I was supposed to do in the beginning. While I'm looking over there, I'll do a little excursion in the very middle of this. Law cases, legal proceedings, as you can all imagine, are extremely expensive. We need more than 5,000 euro a month to pay all the lawyers. I have a little box for donations over there, and it would be very nice if you could pass them around and donate a little bit, because we are not rich. Thank you. Now I'll go back to blogging about funny things. The complaint the federal prosecutor filed against the release of Andrei from prison was had several reasons given for why he could not ever be released from prison at this point and why he was so very dangerous. One is that so-called, in legal terms, it's called danger of absconding, meaning that the danger that he would run away and flee was so great that he needed to be in prison. And one of the reasons given in the document by the federal prosecutor why apparently the danger that he might flee Germany is so great is because earlier that year Andrei has applied for a job in the Netherlands. And there was a phone call between him and his mother, who was worried a little bit and said, "But then, assuming you were accepted in the Netherlands, how are you going to deal with the situation with the family and the children? And who's going to live where?" And then he said, "Well, maybe in the beginning I'll have to go by myself and go back and forth a lot. And then if it is a long-term situation, then we might all move there." And this was considered evidence enough to say that apparently the close social ties that were given as reason for him to be released from prison don't exist. Because apparently he is willing to live away from his family in the Netherlands. And so needs to be put back in prison. Which I thought was rather amazing, because all of the unemployment agencies in Germany, I think, consider this something rather normal to do, even if you have a family that you actually like and want to live with. Also, another thing that was stated as a reason for him to actually need to be in prison was the danger of repetition. And that is something that I found also rather bizarre, because what he is accused of is forming a terrorist organization. Meaning that the danger of repetition, and this is actually stated also quite explicitly, means that once he's out of prison, there is a danger that he might just go out and form just another terrorist organization. And I would really like to know more about what the police think, how terrorist organizations get formed, because I had thought this worked differently. Other things... One story that I really kind of thought rather drastic and I actually didn't manage to write about yet is an anonymous call that happened at the Institute of Sociology at the Humboldt University of Berlin. An anonymous call to one of the colleagues of Andrei at the Institute of Sociology saying that the cops had demanded 20 to 25 personal files of people working there to get those files to be handed over to look at them. And the university never commented on that. And we thought that is really rather drastic to have one sociologist being accused of terrorism and have his life being investigated in such a way already raised a lot of attention. The idea that 20 or 25 other intellectuals or academics are being subjected to this kind of investigation just because they are sociologists and work with Andrei seemed rather rough. Again, the university never confirmed this information. It was just an anonymous call. It may have been made up, I don't know, but I thought it was... I can imagine it's possible. Also, Andrei's account to the network files that he has at the university and to his email on the server at the university. While he was in prison, the account, the password was changed, which normally can only be done by the person themselves. Of course, you have this rhythm when you have to, like, sometimes when you have these big servers, you have to change your password or you're asked to do another one every so many months. But this clearly happened, and that's documented while he was in prison. We contacted the data protection, what is that called, authority of the university as well of Berlin was contacted about this issue, because it is rather, I think, not really complying with data protection regulations that someone breaks into network files of the university and can access the files not only of this one person but of the whole department of the university. And what came out of that is that yes, the password was changed. Yes, somebody probably messed with all of these things. It cannot be proven how this happened. We don't know who that was, and the data protection authority said that there's different possible ways of doing that, either pressurizing someone who has access to the password or real hacking, but since there is no proof, there is no case made out of that. But this apparently, I'd say, is rather evidently one of the methods of the policing of the police trying to get information, which I thought was rather strange because the legal possibilities that they have are already rather wide, and then to use methods that are clearly illegal seemed surprising to me. These are some of the stories, and there's many more in the blog. Most of them are in German. I'm really sorry about that. I would like to have time to translate all of that into English or write both English and German, but my life has been rather intense and I just didn't manage. Maybe someday I will. The reactions to the blog were surprising to me. I didn't expect to have so many reactions. I didn't really think that this would cause so much stir up. People who read it in the beginning were friends and family, which was my intention because, like I said, I wrote these things down to tell people who I knew anyways and to not have to repeat these things all of the time. And then, of course, bloggers, other bloggers. I started to get to know the German blogosphere better than I did before. And then there's people with an affiliation to new media and technologies who are reading my blog. And of course, people who follow the legal proceedings. I think these are basically the main groups who are reading what I write. And the reactions, there are several types of reactions. Lots of people were extremely shocked. There were many people who said that they find this especially shocking because they thought something like what's happening to us only happens in totalitarianist states. Some even compared it to fascism, which I wouldn't do that, but it happened several times. The comparison to the Eastern Bloc, to China, Korea, Russia, was done several times. One quotation, I would never have thought that we would get this far in our democracy. Other people considered it to be very brave to do a weblog about surveillance like that. There was also some more theoretical thoughts saying, is it, for example, dissident to blog about everyday life? And I'm thinking about how blogging is a dissident act in itself. Others said it's a way to gain back autonomy when you're living a life of total control. There was another group of people who very explicitly said that they were afraid to comment on my blog as a part of my blog, or even to link to my blog, or even to look at it. As a part of this law case against the so-called militant group, it became known that the Federal Police of Germany has done a so-called honeypot and has some information about the militant group on their websites, but they log all the IPs who look at that website. And so people very clearly drew the parallel, also saying that if they just look at my blog, they will probably also be under investigation. And actually, I thought for the people who said that they really worried about whether it was okay to add comments, to do that as a comment, I thought that was rather a little brave step to do as well. And then the obvious also happened, and this is something that I was rather afraid of in the beginning when I wasn't so sure whether it's a wise thing to go public with all of these things. There's the discussion whether actually I'm just paranoid with all of these things, and that, like, of course phones can crash, and of course phones make funny sounds, and your TV makes funny sounds, and sometimes there's technical problems, so you call somebody else than you originally wanted to. All of these, of course, can be technical mistakes. And But then the big majority said, yeah, okay, it could just be a technical problem, but as she is obviously living with surveillance and all of so many things are happening, then it's rather likely that actually this is a result of surveillance. There were also people wondering whether I'm real and whether the story is true and whether I'm not just somebody else. And other people try to help us in saying how we could better protect ourselves. For example, that we should be using encryption or Linux, or should use prepaid mobile phones and change them every 2 hours. which I thought was kind of cute, because I was surprised to see that apparently at least partners of sociologists are accused of always using unencrypted Windows. I did have an encrypted hard drive that was seized by the federal police, and until now I don't know whether they managed to crack it, but I would really like to. And it was given back to me two days after it was seized. All the computers were seized also during the raid. Even my son's computer was seized, and then that was the biggest argument that I had with the police officers in our place, because I said, listen, my son had his birthday yesterday and he was given a computer and he's never even tried it, and how am I going to explain to him that his birthday present is gone? It's easier to explain why his father is gone, but the birthday present... And after 2 hours of reasoning about this, they agreed to just copy it, and they gave it back the same evening, and my son never knew. Anyway, we had all of these people telling us how to protect our privacy, which I thought was very nice. And on the other hand, I thought maybe this is the worst possible moment in my life to start protecting my privacy more, besides the fact that I don't really think it helps in this situation, because assuming that we probably have keyloggers and all kinds of listening devices and maybe even bugs in our room, and I'm pretty sure that pretty much everything police can do they have tried on us, so I'm not quite sure it's worth it spending so much time now using more encryption, because at the moment my point of view is that assuming they know it all, personally, I don't think this can be criminalized the way we live. I'll not even try to hide anything at the moment, at least, even though generally I do think people should protect their privacy as much as they can. What I found surprising is I had hoped in a way that we would find out more how in detail surveillance works. I had hoped that people who know more about these types of things would also comment and explain the little mysteries that I have experienced and explain why this happens or why that happens. And that happened very, very little. And I can tell you that I'm always open for this kind of information, because I still would really like to know how this works and how these things are being done. What also was triggered was a general debate about surveillance and the different laws that are in the process of either being realized or introduced at the moment. One person said, this is exactly the reason why we don't want to have online searches, no data retention, no phone tapping. Or somebody else said, I only now understand all the details of surveillance. Some other quotes. If only half of this is true, it is very dark in Germany, very dark. Or, can't say that you didn't know, and we bloggers are the worst, we type away our bad conscience and link to some questioning articles instead of going out and doing something. Somebody else said, I can't make up my mind whether this is also ridiculous or instead the beginning of fascism. And then... something that I also rather liked was there have always been reports about police investigations, but before they were done on paper by cheap print shops and normal people didn't read them because they had too many difficult words. But now this is different. Another longer quotation that I also liked is this. But the two of them have nothing to hide, do they? In that case, a little surveillance along the lines of the laws won't hurt. It can't happen to you. You don't see any bad guys and you always take your mobile along. Do you know what I'm doing later? And whether I'm sometimes, whether I sometimes don't take my mobile? These are the forms of abuse everybody is warning about. I didn't think they would be shown in such a bold way. Some other people wondered whether the police is going to start blogging about their point of view and their side of things. As far as I know, they didn't, or in a very conspiratorial way. I didn't notice, but if you find out, please tell me. And there was a lot and a lot and a lot of support, which felt very good, because if you are subjected to this type of thing, I think it's hard to not go schizophrenic, feeling this happening to you and at the same time thinking this is impossible, this can't be true, this can't be real, this is so ridiculous in one way and so amateurist in a way, so badly done. It's amazing to understand that one of the biggest industrial countries in the world living with the threat of terrorism, and then this is the way how they want to deal with terrorism, and being subjected to that and living with that makes you, I think. Well, let's put it differently. I think if I didn't have children, I probably would have gone crazy. I imagine that if people, and there are so many people living with this kind of thing, and I think you can't react in any other way than going extremely depressed or really going crazy, because it's hard to understand that this is actually real, that this is serious, that this is the way police are doing this type of thing. And I think my children forced me to just function and to just go on and make breakfast in the morning and to pick them up from kindergarten and just play funny games and do normal things. And I'm very grateful that this was the way I had to live my life then at that moment. And yeah, and there was so much support, and I wish that other people who live in the same kind of situation took the chance to also go out and get this kind of support by talking about what it feels like to live this kind of life. What I'd like to say in the end, and I really need to finish, is that other people have asked me whether I think our behavior has changed with the surveillance. And I have asked myself whether I think my behavior has changed with surveillance. And in a way, I think for the most things I'd say no. Then again, I think it's not true, because what happens is that you constantly think about it. You constantly control yourself in the things that you do and how you do them. I'm, for example, I'm extremely curious. Like when I am in the street and somebody goes by, or I have to stop for some reason, lock my bike or something, and something moves, and I just, without thinking about it, turn my head. And now every time I stand and lock my bike, I don't turn my head. Or talking on the phone, specifically after these stories like the black bag, when you get the reaction straight away and you get it black on white, what the reaction is and what the police think of the things that you say, you start phrasing things differently. You try to be as clear as possible. You don't just say, come on, let's meet in the same bar. You say, if somebody calls you and says this very same sentence, you know, you mean we want to meet in that and that bar at that and that time to discuss blah, blah, blah. or you really try to not make any jokes because that is quite evident that police are like, they don't like irony. And they really don't understand irony, really, like, because these things are written down apparently and you cannot transmit the tone, and then that would be the nicest interpretation of what's happening. They don't get when you joke, so you just don't joke. You are very serious, you are very matter-of-factly, you describe exactly what you want to say, because in the back of your mind, you always read how they would write it down. And that is still happening with me whenever I'm on the phone. I think about what they would be thinking and how they will comment what I'm saying at the moment, so I try to phrase it in a way that it is not ambiguous. Also, I I remember several times I said something and then in the very same moment I thought, oh my God, no, you can't say it like that. For example, I used the pronoun we several times when I described surveillance measures on the phone, and I said, so this is now, this and that is happening, they will again think that we are planning attacks. And then I think, oh my God, but I'm not even accused of planning an attack. It's not about me, it's about him, so I shouldn't be, they will be thinking we, but I should be saying they will be thinking he. And these little things, like you talk, you think about what you think about anyways, and at the same time you think also how they will think about it. And that is rather straining, and it does, of course, change the way you behave on the phone. On the other hand, I try to not change too much. For example, I still fight with people on the phone when I'm angry, and I know other people don't do this kind of thing. I did get new curtains for our apartment because the feeling of having a video camera outside that watches everything that you do is rather not very nice to have. In fact, I mean, I don't know whether we have bugs in the place. I have just recently read some articles about some cops dreaming of having cameras inside apartments, and then this is just the legal part of what the federal police can do. Then there's always the secret services who do things that you don't know about, and usually it's more and it's worse than what the police do. So I wouldn't be too surprised understanding that also there's cameras in our place, but I don't know, of course, and that is a very uncomfortable feeling to never be by yourself wherever you are. I finish now because there's only 5 minutes left. And I hope that you have some questions or comments to what I have to say. Just two little announcements. Because all of this is about terrorism, and because the High Court also has had to decide what terrorism is, we have published a contest on the question, what is terrorism? And we are still looking for contributions by people. And I would like to ask you all to think about what you think is terrorist and what terrorism is. And you can find all of this on our website. Also the contributions by other people, and we are looking for more contributions, and we have very nice prizes to win. And I'll stop here. Thank you. Thank you. Wow.
Thank you very much. And this is Kamal.
Thank you. Thank you very much.